Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 19, Episode 25. This is Writing Excuses. From the classroom to the page.
I'm Erin.
I'm Marshall.
I'm Mary Robinette.
And I wanted us to have this wild card, partly so that we could grill Marshall a little bit, who finished an MFA program recently.
I did.
About all the things that you learned. Please repeat them to us. No. And like, actually, how do you take all the things you learn in the classroom for people who are listening on this podcast and actually like turn it into something you're doing when you're writing?
I think it depends on what you... For me, it depended on how I started the why I started the program in the first place. I started the program to make myself make the time to write because I really wanted to get as much as I could out of it. I was paying the money. I had some amazing instructors. And my goal was to figure out how to make writing a bigger part of my life amidst all of the chaos already of that's teaching full time, parenting, and all that. And I'll be honest, I graduated in August of 2023, and I took a break from writing for a little bit. And a lot of what I'm doing, what I was doing is soaking in some of that stuff that I learned and trying to figure out how to go back to a schedule and remember that I can do this. And the big part is too, is keeping that connection with my community as well. And keeping that motivation going. Now, specifics, it also, I think, depends on the type of class you're taking. In the beginning, we were taking a lot of classes around different genres. So I personally now, just as one example, am trying to incorporate some of the studying of mystery and romance and those elements and those beats and stuff like that into my science fiction and my fantasy that I'm writing because I love those genres so much, but and I may or may not be working on a mystery slash sci-fi novel right now. So it's fun to kind of think about, I learned all these specific things, studied all this work, but I really want to figure out how to make it my own now.
I like something that you said, which is I think a piece that a lot of people miss, which is that after you've learned something, that it takes a while to internalize it. And I see a lot of people who will take a workshop and afterwards they stop writing, but they never start again. It's not an intentional break. And some of that is that I think that they aren't thinking about the action of internalizing, that that takes time and it takes energy.
Yeah, and part of the clarity, to clarify kind of what I was saying, why I'm taking a break too, is when at the end of the program, I ended up with a pretty decent draft of a novel. So at this point, I'm trying to make another pass at it, And I want to start querying agents because I really want to try to get something out there. I've been working on this for years and years and years. I finally went back to school. I'm teaching creative writing to high schoolers. I'm trying to get a job teaching at the college level. And also I want to publish something. So it's going to be that editing work and that revision work and putting myself out there. And that's terrifying.
So, yeah. Yes, it does not stop being terrifying, honestly. But I think like one of the things that I find is that the motivation shifts, that when you're in class, and I see this also a lot where I will have a student and they come and they talk about how they had written all of this while they were in their MFA and they can't find the motivation to write afterwards. And I find this for myself that I go to a writing workshop and after the writing workshop, it's hard to find that motivation because, you know, it's like, well, there was a deadline, there was body modeling, there was a teacher that I didn't want to let down. So I had all of this external motivation. And then when you're cut loose from that, you suddenly have to find internal motivation, which is a whole different racket.
Or just different forms of external motivation. Yeah. Like one of the things
money.
That money is a big
back
one,
to money.
But also, like I've been in groups with people. That's why people have critique groups sometimes, is that you want to continue to have people you can disappoint because the disappointment of others, such a driver in life, maybe just my life. But you know, that way there's something else. There's another deadline. There's another way to make yourself do things. And I think that's one good thing that you can actually take from the classroom. That's not a direct lesson that you're taught. So it's not something that your teacher tells you. It's more how you learn well. What are the kinds of things that work well for you? Are there exercises you did in class where you were like, doing 6 short flash pieces really got my engine going? Or, oh, it was much better when I was able to do a back and forth on email with my professor about this particular part of my novel. And then you can say, how can I create those same structures in my life now? Like, where are people that I can reach out to who can fill that role in my life?
Yeah, and we're all at different stages. I talk to my cohort. We're all really close. We get on Zoom here and there and kind of try to bring each other up. And a lot of us are all in different places in that journey. You know, it's like, are you writing? Are you working on this? Are you working on a new project? But something you said earlier, is there a specific lesson? It wasn't necessarily a specific lesson for me, but it was the way they structured the thesis project that worked really well for me. I really like just sitting down and writing, but I noticed that when I outline, I'm more productive.
Mm-hmm.
And in the thesis process, there was multiple outline stages. It wasn't like, okay, throw this outline together, you know, and then just start writing. I changed stuff as I went, and we had amazing advisors that supported us, but that kind of living outline and keeping up with that and tracking character wants and needs and arcs and relationships and that kind of thing as I wrote really changed how I plan on approaching novel writing going forward. And I think without that, I'd probably get stuck pretty quickly because now I know I can lean back on that structural part of it that wasn't in my toolbox before.
I find that so when I started writing, I've talked about this on the podcast before, that I would write a story that had a really good beginning, a really good middle, and a really good end to 3 completely different stories that happened to have the same cast of characters.
I kind of want to read those.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
That's probably a roller coaster ride right there.
No, they're just not. They're just like...
You're like, it's not.
It's not. No, the story ends and you're like, that was the ending? They just kind of stop. So for me, the thing that I had to learn, like the practice that I had to learn was structure. And so I had to spend a lot of time doing very intentional practice on learning structures. So I would do thumbnail sketches where I would just write beginning, middle, and end for things that would fit on 3x5 cards, just to get this sense of, okay, making sure that all of those things were actually connected. And that craft, having that craft to lean on, is very helpful to me now at a point where I have internalized structure and I can just write and trust that I'm going to have that beginning, middle, and end. But when I'm having a bad brain day, having the tool, having the craft to reach for and being able to articulate what that craft is has been incredibly useful. Did you find in when you were doing your sessions that there was any way that, like, were there things that you found that made it easier for you to start internalizing things or for you to identify the things that you needed to internalize?
What do you mean? Sorry.
So, like,
like after the program, you?
After the program or even during the program, it's like, oh, this is a really good tool that I'm having to use consciously right now. But at some point, I won't have to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was really lucky to have some awesome instructors. So one of the classes we actually took was short forms. Mm-hmm. And the number of short stories I have now, I'm really thankful for. But short stories are really difficult to do well. So internalizing some of the feedback from my workshops and my instructors was kind of not the challenge, but just making sure that as soon as the workshop was over, I made some notes. I look back at my work relatively soon after, just so I could, okay, so when I go back to revise, you know, this character was flat because of this reason, or the feedback on the ending was it was too abrupt and I didn't, you know, I didn't, the promises weren't kept at the end, things like that.
One of the things that I really enjoyed doing when I did workshopping in my MFA program was to actually take all of, so people will write things on the paper, like you give them your story, they write marks all over it, and then they give it back to you. And I would put all like the page ones together, all the page twos together, all the page threes together, and then actually just kind of like flip through them and look for where everyone, like if everyone highlighted a sentence and was like, amazing, I'd be like, that is a good sentence. If everyone wrote question marks in the same corner of a page, I was like, maybe that is confusing. And it was a way to actually make, because for workshop can be hard for people because sometimes, it can feel like people are coming for you. Hmm. I generally enjoy it because I'm like, I just forced like X number of people to read my work and talk about it. So I'm like, ha-ha,
I wish I could think about it that way.
But even so, like when you take it and look at it like in aggregate, mm-hmm. like then it's a lot easier to look at the patterns and not get stuck in one particular person's feedback, but look at like where those systems happened. And it made it a lot easier for me to figure out then what were the kinds of things that I was doing that I kept getting flagged for that were the things that maybe I should internalize, looking at my own work in aggregate, mm-hmm. and what were the things that kept coming up over and over again.
I love that technique. I also look for patterns. And as you were talking, I'm like, oh, because I use Google Docs and everyone will comment, like you can easily see that everybody's commenting in the same spot. I have to go through and clear them so that people aren't commenting because other people have commented, but that's a whole other thing. So,
well, something Aaron said too, workshopping was always a really terrifying thing for me. It still is. But throughout the course of the program, I figured out, kind of like what you were saying, I get all this feedback. And depending on the story and depending on and how well I knew these people, some of the feedback, it was to being able to take the feedback that mattered the most. Not that some people's feedback didn't matter, but it was just like, okay, this person is confused because they don't really like fantasy. And they've told me that. And I get it. They don't understand this element, but everybody else really liked this element. So I can put this person's feedback aside and focus on the clusters of stuff. So being able to take that and having the confidence to eventually get a writing group together and willingly go forward and workshop things together. That's what I'm moving up to. So
something that you said earlier that I just want to circle back to that I really liked was that you would make notes about what you had learned. And I find that that's one of the best ways for me to solidify things is to write them down because I have to articulate them. And one of the reasons that I love teaching and love doing the podcast is because when I have to explain it to someone else, that's one of the best ways for me to start internalizing it myself, because now I'm taking words that someone else has said and I'm internalizing them. I have to, in order to be able to express it in my own language. And that for me is one of the ways, one of the ways that I will try to put into practice things that I'm learning after taking a class. Speaking of after, we're going to pause here. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some other ways that you can go from the page, from the classroom to the page.
This episode of Writing Excuses is sponsored in part by Acorns. Money can be a difficult topic for writers and creative professionals. It's not like earning a regular paycheck that comes in at reliable intervals. It requires more careful planning to make sure that that advance covers you not just this year, but sets you up for the future as well. Learning to invest and be smart with your money takes time and research, and it's easy to put that off in favor of short-term goals. I encourage all the writers I work with to read up on the options out there and do their homework to figure out what makes sense for them. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing in your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Head to acorns.com/WX or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing your future today. Client testimonial, compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/WX.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Fall of the House of Usher, created by Mike Flanagan from various stories and poems by Edgar Allan Poe, is some of the best storytelling I've ever seen on TV. It's horror, full of jump scares, dread, and, well, horrific things, but it opens in media res to diffuse the tension, or at least to get us to let down our guard. In the first 10 minutes, we learn that all of CEO Roderick Usher's children have died. So, hey, that's cool. We know who will live and who will die, so we can relax and enjoy the ride, right? That was my thinking, and right or wrong, I'm happy to let you think that too. Yes, there are some surprises, but relax. What really carries this series is the outstanding performances upon the brilliant script. The words, they are delicious, like lemons. So very lemon. The show carries a TV MA rating due to language, sex, smoking, substances, suicide, and violence, and that rating unfortunately omits the fact that there's also some violence to animals, especially in episodes 3 and 4. The internet has spoilers and explainers if you're concerned. I watched the entire 8-episode run 4 times in an 8-week period. Once for fun, once for more fun, and twice more so I could learn things while watching other people see it for the first time. So I guess all 4 times were for fun.
So one of the other techniques that I am a big fan of is taking a chance. I don't know about you all, but I've been in classes where the teacher is talking. I'm like, well, this is some bullshit.
As a teacher, I know for a fact there are a lot of students thinking about that about me a lot of the time.
Yep, same, absolutely.
Mostly because they don't want to be there, but continue.
Yeah, and what I've learned is that if I go in and think that I am going to get nothing out of the class, but if I think, okay, let me just try this thing that they're talking about, even if I think it is completely absurd and not going to be useful, I will get something out of that, even when it's not the thing that they intend for me to get out of it. So I think of it as auditioning a change or auditioning a technique.
Yeah. Also, one of the things I'm now remembering that they had us do in my program was we'd write these annotations where we would try to like analyze a story for what it's doing well, doing our close readings of our own. And one thing they suggested was to do a few close readings of things you hate, like books and stories that you're like, this story, I would burn it. But you don't burn books, don't do that. But and figure out why. And I think the same is true for techniques. Like occasionally somebody tells you to do something or asks you to do an exercise and you're just like, who knows, maybe one of our homeworks, you're like, nah, not feeling it, dog. But it's nice to kind of try it and see what is it about it that you're reacting to so strongly.
Yeah.
Is it because like it goes counter to the way that you think about storytelling? Is it just because you're in a bad mood that day? What is it that's going on? And if you can identify that, anything you feel that strongly about, there's probably something there that you can use for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going to use a concrete example of this kind of thing. I took a workshop and the instructor said to put all 5 senses on every page. And we were doing standard manuscript format. So this is 250 words and all 5 senses on every page. And I'm like, well, that's I agree that you should use all 5 senses, but that's extreme. And I don't think that. So I did it. And then when they started critiquing, the instructor said, you know, I started reading your story and I just fell asleep. And first of all, you should never say that to a student.
That's horrible.
But second, they were right. It was really boring and it was hard to tell what was going on. And I knew as I was writing it that it was a problem. But I was like, they told me to do this. And what I realized was that by putting all 5 senses on the page, I was making everything in there of equal value and that I could use the senses to anchor things that were important, that when I put in a sense that it was going to ground the reader and that if I reserved those for the important things, that it was significantly more powerful. So I would not have come to that understanding if I hadn't tried this technique that I hated. And that is, I think, why it's worthwhile to audition stuff. And I love this idea of doing a close read of things you hate.
I hear, see, and smell you.
Just do not taste me, please.
So one of the things that when Aaron was talking a minute ago, I thought about was at the end, you know, the tail end of the program, my program was the thesis project, right? Mm-hmm. And we're working on this novel. We've been leading up to it. And they paired us up with a thesis advisor. Mm-hmm. And I got really lucky to work with an awesome writer. His name is Aize Jama Everett, and he rocks. But his style of suggesting things to me was kind of what Mary Robinette was saying. I feel like he's like, hey, have you thought about this thing? Have you thought about maybe this character responds this way instead? Or something, you know, the way he suggested things wasn't like, you need to change X, Y, and Z because I hate this character. It was like, well, this character is really interesting. And then he made a suggestion about a character who doesn't have a POV in the book, but he does at the very, very end. And he goes, what if this is this character's story. And I said, okay, that felt really daunting. And it really is his story. Mm-hmm. But it's not his story yet. And it's not his POV now. And that really helped me power to the end of it, because I knew what I was leading up to. I knew that that character at the end was going to step into his own, and then it was going to be about him, more about him,
yeah,
all about him.
I love the way that you, like, there are two things that you've said, maybe more than that, where it feels like you're keeping a really open mind. Like, there you, yes, sort of were like, mm-hmm, no, because, not just like, nah, I'm not doing that, but like, let me consider it and figure out why it isn't working. And then way at the beginning, you were talking about using other genres.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people, you know, you get really comfortable in the genre that you know. And school is a time when often you will have to read or work with or try out genres and formats that just may not work for you. Like, some people don't like writing short fiction and may never.
Right.
But the exercise of trying it, maybe you take a little bit out of that, in terms of the way that you write a sentence to try to get as much as you can and make it dense. And you can use that in a part in your novel in which things are really emotional and heavy. So I think that it's great that you did that, as opposed to being like, mystery, whatever, you know. Well, instead, you brought it into what you were doing.
And the result, actually, by the time I got to that thesis project, was I knew I wanted to write a black space opera. And then I'm like, but the alienness of I wanted horror elements. I know it's not all the way working yet, but when I go back again, I really want to make that, I want to make it terrifying at certain, mm-hmm, points, you know, and it's not a horror novel, but the enemy is horrifying. So I want to make sure that I want the reader to feel a certain way when the characters that we're supposed to love, and I hope they do, encounter those things.
Yeah. I actually really hate and love at the same time that moment when you can feel that something is not right, because at that point it has shifted from being into being a known unknown.
Yeah.
It's like, you know that there's a problem there. You don't know exactly what the problem is, which is so much better than, I don't know if this is any good. It's like, yeah, this is good. There is an opportunity here. And just interrogating it and trying to figure out what that opportunity is and how you can get into it. Sometimes I will do, I have this intentional practice thing that I do where it's like reverse engineering an outline, but it is a thing that I discovered as a teaching technique.
Mm.
And then realized that it was actually incredibly useful, which is, I go through and I highlight the things in the story that are like load-bearing and important in a scene. And then I kind of categorize them based on Mice Quotient, which, for people who are listening to this in isolation, is an organizational structure, milieu, inquiry, character, event. And so I do that, and then I can see, oh, like, actually the bulk of this scene is this event shift, this status quo shift. But when I come into the scene, I'm not doing anything about that. And there's a whole bunch of me figuring out what I'm writing. And I knew it was flabby, but I couldn't figure out why it was flabby. And I love, this is one of the reasons that I love teaching, is because it gives you these tools that you can use and then do some intentional practice on your own work.
And that was one of the shifts, I feel like, as a cohort, we got to really in a heightened way. Like, our instructors at some point, I feel like we're kind of sitting back and letting us discuss each other's work in such a way. We would come to it, like I said, being like, well, I know something's not working. You know, we would tag a couple questions to a short story and be like, I feel like this character is this, or I don't feel like this part of it isn't working. And when we came back to discuss and workshop it, the language we used, the feedback we were able to give each other was invaluable. I mean, at that point, because we had all leveled up in such a way, we were able to look at each other's work and know each other's work well enough to be like, okay, I hear what you're saying, but I actually think it works. But I think what you're really missing is this.
Mm-hmm.
And those conversations are something I'll never forget about being in this program. And of course, we made a plenty of excuses to get together early before residency and stuff like that, so we could have more of those conversations. But that, again, that's part of that community thing. So,
well, speaking of community, I think it is time for us to give you some homework.
Yes, I have the homework, which is for you to become the teacher. And so what I'd like you to do is find something that maybe you're struggling with in your work, something that you're not completely sure about. Maybe it's POV, who knows? Maybe it's voice, maybe it's one of these things. And think, how would you try to teach this concept to someone else? And what homework would you assign them?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses, now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. Your hosts for this episode of Writing Excuses were Mary Robinette Kowal, Aaron Roberts, with special guest Marshall Carr Jr. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.